And if people don't know what a dingbat is, look, I'm gonna ask Juju. Juju, do you know what a dingbat is?
Is it like the dingo ate my baby?
Before they get in your business, be in charge of your business. Own it, cause it's your business. Your business, business. Handle all of your business. Value all of your business. You say you're minding your business, my business.
What's up, what's up, good people? Welcome into Montgomery & Company. I'm Renee Montgomery. And listen, happy Father's Day. Happy Juneteenth. Happy Pride Month, everybody. There's a lot of energy this month, and this episode is no different. We got Shantae Wayans on the call today. We got her. We're talking comedy. We're talking life. And yes, it's that Shantae Wayans of the Funny Wayans family. We also have Amaya Tout and Alan Hodges, who are the co-founders of Song Glorious. You might have seen them on Shark Tank. We're going to talk business. And then we're also going to talk Father's Day. We're going to talk Juneteenth, cultural appropriation. What's going on? Cole's going to make it make sense with dads at the door. We're going to have a lot of fun, a lot of energy. It's turned up. Let's go! Okay, so I know that it's Father's Day, but I got a story because I met Mrs. Obama, y'all. Let me just say that again for the people in the back. Our forever first lady, Mrs. Michelle Obama, number 44's wife. I met her this past week and it was an experience. So let me, I just have to tell you about this experience because memories are forever. First, when, you know, we go, shouts to When We All Vote, they gave the Atlanta Dream an award. The reason I went to LA was to receive an award for the Atlanta Dream. It was at the Culture for Democracy Summit. Mrs. Obama was going to be there. So, you know, we're going, like, you flip the schedule upside down, we're heading there. So we get the award. And then when I'm going to go meet Mrs. Obama, it was a whole ordeal. There were celebrities everywhere. It was star-studded. I just casually ran into Carrie Champion, Doc Rivers, Chris Paul, Nneka Ogumike. I mean, like, casually. CJ McCollum. Like, this is just through the hallway. So as I'm walking through the hallways to get there, you know, I'm seeing all these people. Harrison Barnes was there. And then I get to, you know, you go through two doors to get to where she is. I thought, it's a whole line around the stadium, pretty much. I'm talking about this line is long. So I look at the guy that, you know, walked us up there. I'm like, don't you know chocolate melts in the sun? Because we're out here waiting. I got photos to take. I'm nervous. So then the lady that's the host was in front of me. They have to pull her to the front. So, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I got a flight to catch. I'm wondering if I could hop with her. We get to jump to the front of the line. And then when we get there, they start confiscating stuff. Now, mind you, this is a big deal, obviously. So the Atlanta Dream, we had jerseys made. One of the jerseys says number 44 has Mrs. Obama on the back. I know that's very clever because President Obama was number 44. Then we had a When We All Vote jersey made for them. Then I had a ball that I wanted to get signed because in 2009, when I went to the White House to meet President Obama, he signed a ball for me. I had asked for his campaign ball. He signed it, told me fortune favors the bold. And I'm like, whoa, the ball's not at our house in West Virginia. I have to say that out loud. So don't nobody be trying to run up on nobody's houses. It's in a secure place. But long story short, I wanted to get the king and the queen to sign a ball. So I had this whole line ready for when I go meet Mrs. Obama. So now it's my turn. I'm in the front of the line with nothing to show. You're supposed to bring gifts to the queen. I don't have no gifts. They've been confiscated. But I go to tell her my line. I said, my forever first lady. In 2009, I got to meet President Barack Obama. And then she cut me off and she was like, yeah, that's not the point right now. It's about me right now. And I was like, oh my God. So, you know, I had to pivot real quick. I'm like, that's what I'm trying to say. I wanted to meet my forever first lady. You're our family's MVP. My snook loves you. My wife loves you. Boom, boom, boom. The Atlanta Dream, we thank you. And she was like, you know, we thank you guys too for what you're doing in the community. And then at that point, you know, I guess my time, they was kind of moving me out the way, shifting this out the way. And I shouted to her, you're welcome to an Atlanta Dream game anytime. She shouted, okay. And I felt like I was in the midst of a Secret Service operation. I knew they were all around me, but I couldn't really tell who was what. And then they had already not let the film crew in. So we didn't get the footage we wanted, but I was feeling on a high. I felt really high. I'm like, I'm mic'd up. So at least we got Mrs. Obama's voice. So I'm feeling good leaving there. That was the best 1 minute of my life, honestly. Magic Johnson was there. It was star studded. And as we know, Magic Johnson is a co-owner of the Bank of California Stadium. And that's where the event was held. So it was just a really crazy event. And I was really excited because although we didn't get video, I knew I had the audio. But would you believe that when I walked around the corner and I met up with the crew, they let me know that apparently the audio gets scrambled when you get around the first lady. You know what? That part was cool to me too, because I knew that I was in a covert operation. And then when I found out that they scrambled my mic, that it was really lit. So I know it's Father's Day. I know Juneteenth is coming up. Shouts to the first lady, my forever first lady. Already feel like they don't get enough love. They probably don't feel that way because, you know, we talk a lot about moms and how moms carry the household and how moms do their thug thizzle and they work and they take care of home and how moms are just moms. Shouts to the moms. But hey, this is about the dads right now. So I understand that the dads may not feel like they get enough love on Father's Day. You know, I saw recently a video of LeBron. He was playing basketball with his sons. LeBron was playing basketball with his sons, and something interesting happened at the end of the video.
Yep.
First of all, his son said that he was going to go play video games. I don't know what his son said either, but LeBron was like, what are you about to do with the video games? And it was some video game term that we don't know as adults, I'm assuming. And then at the end of the video, LeBron does a dunk, and he says, on your head. Isn't that what they say? On your head. And I was like, LeBron, what are you doing? This is us. Watch your head, boy. He should have subbed me in for that one. So watch your head on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the Father's Days out there. We wanted to show you guys some love. Okay. Shouts to my father-in-law as well on Father's Day, because we was just over there. He just made me a steak. It was delicious. We love the fathers here, right?
Yes, come on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And let me just
tell Jerry, I wish I was there.
He loves cooking for everybody, especially when Renee, when my mom comes, like I said, they always gotta have Renee taken care of, both her and Jerry.
I know that.
I love it here.
Yep. So let me tell you, I have some great Father's Day memories of Diddy, but I have some really funny ones too. And if anybody knows my father, they know he is a logical person. It don't matter what's going on in the world.
You got to make it make sense
for
Diddy.
You have to make it make sense, which is probably where I got that from too. I'm very like, it has to be logical. If it's not logical, it's ridiculous. So basically, my dad was teaching us about logic our entire lives. He would always have jokes or something. So one of the funniest things that my dad did to me that made me just feel like, oh, that was real crazy and dumb, is one day I was washing my hair. And you know how teenagers, as we do, because I was going to get all dolled up. I was be going out with my friends, probably going somewhere to freeze with no clothes on and walk around with no jacket. Think I was cute. So I had washed my hair and I went to mom and dad's room and they were watching some type of sporting event on TV. This has been our entire lives. And I said, Mom, can I borrow the hair dryer? And she's like, yeah, sure. Now, I just got out of the shower. I just washed, deep conditioned, rinsed, and now I'm ready to blow dry and get cute. And I walk in there and I say, I got to borrow the blow dryer, and my hair is soaking wet. And my dad's like, baby doll, you got to be careful now. You can't use that while your hair is wet. You'll electrocute yourself. I said, oh, right. Yeah, you're right, Dad. I'll wait till it dries and then I'll blow dry. And then I went to my room, put the blow dryer on my bed, started watching Yo MTV Raps, which if you're old enough to know,
okay,
you know.
Okay, if you know, you know.
If you know, you know. And then it literally took me about 4 minutes. And I was like, wait a minute. I said, Dad, that's what the blow dryer is for. He said, babe, you got air between your ears. Just straight air. It's nothing in between your ears. It took you that long to figure out. Daniel, why would you do that? He said, just air. It's just pure aerated. But
you know, you bring up a great point, because I think that Snook is the leader of the dingbats our family. Is that what he called? Like, oh, did he call you a dingbat too,
yes.
Snook?
Yes.
Okay, so Snook's a dingbat. Cole's definitely.
He's called all of us dingbats, including Nikki's mother-in-law on the streets of Washington, D.C. He yelled it at us that we were a car full of dingbats.
A car full of dingbats.
Yeah, Diddy can't handle like people that aren't logical. Like, he, if you can't make it make sense, Diddy can't handle that. So no. I think that I'm the only non-dingbat of the family.
Oh, Renee, please. Oh, no, Renee. You've had your dingbat moments, too.
We all have dingbat moments in our lives. Like, we all do as humans. But you guys are dingbats on a normal basis. And I think that
You have got to be kidding, Renee. I have heard Dad refer to you as dingbat on more than one occasion.
She calls me one all the time too.
She be, when people say stuff and I'll be like, huh? No. And if people don't know what a dingbat is, a dingbat, look, I'm gonna ask Juju. Juju, is your mic working?
I don't know. Am I working? Testing 1, 2.
Yes. Juju, do you know what a dingbat is?
Is it like the dingo ate my baby?
Well, I'm gonna give you some hints on what a dingbat is. Serena's a dingbat, Snook's a dingbat, and Cole's a dingbat. Now, does that help you understand any more what a dingbat is?
I do not want to step in any booby traps. I don't know nothing from nothing about dingbats. Don't sound good.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so a dingbat, thank you, Danny. Danny is in the chat. A dingbat is basically like saying someone is airheaded. Some people call it like blonde moment. But like if somebody says she's a blonde, they're basically calling her a dingbat. They have very airheaded moments. Danny said a space cadet. All of the above. We're talking about Father's Day. Juju, you don't have any kids, do you?
No, ma'am. I rebuke that in the name of Jesus. I rebuke that. I cast it out now.
All right, so we're not gonna give you no Father's Day love. You get the uncle love, okay? If they have Uncle's Day. Roy is the only father on the podcast, so happy Father's Day to our producer Roy. Y'all be nice to Roy on Father's Day. So we were talking about dingbats, and my Diddy calls a lot of us dingbats because he likes logic. But we're speaking about holidays in the general sense of the term. And we want to talk about a little bit of what's going on. Like, that's what I'm going to call this. What's going on? Because we saw that Walmart released some ice cream that I guess it was Juneteenth ice cream. I don't even know what flavor it was. Does anybody know what the actual flavor?
I think it had strawberries. Didn't it have a strawberry in it or something?
It had a little bit of strawberry in it or something.
I think it was almost like a Neapolitan feel, but they put a Juneteenth name on it, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember the exact foolishness it was, but that was something like that.
So what exactly about the ice cream made it Juneteenth? I do not know. But what I do know is that people weren't necessarily feeling this idea. I also heard something about some watermelon salad. What's going on? What's going on?
Well, let me just say this. Now, you know, I can understand that, you know, Walmart or any of these big corporations might want to let people know that they're embracing diversity. But why don't you embrace diversity by taking that money that you use to develop and market this ice cream or this watermelon salad and give it to a HBCU? Say, in honor of Juneteenth, I'm giving this money to Morehouse, Spelman, West Virginia State University, or something like that. Why are you trying to just, fill your pockets more on our day?
What's going on?
Greed. Yeah, it is. It's corporate greed. And then I didn't even know about
this. Cultural appropriation.
Yes. And I heard about some Bath and Body Works line of...
Oh, yeah, for Black History Month. Yep.
On Black History Month. So what she's referencing is on Black History Month, I believe that they came out with a collection or a line that had something along the lines to do with Black History Month. Again, we ask the same question. What's going on?
And, you know, we need lotion every month of the year. So, you know, I'm just saying. It's not like we just need it during Black History Month. We need lotion every month of the year.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
You should be doing something.
Exactly. And I told Bryce that because Bryce said, well, my son had a debate with some kids in his class and they were talking about certain products and everything. And I told him, because he was saying they were debating whether certain ethnicities need lotion. And I said, how many lotion commercials have you had that you've seen the Black ethnicity? Because we wear it anyway. Why? They wouldn't market it to us because they already make, that's where they make their money.
Somebody saying that, I've seen every race be ashy. Now, I've had some white teammates that had some ashy legs. So I'm trying to figure out what's the debate.
I want to know who was debating.
That was the debate. Whether Caucasians and other ethnicities needed lotion. They didn't, some of them felt like lotion was not needed. And I told them, I said, well, when you go back back for the rest of this debate because it was, I guess it was something they were doing in class. I said, ask him how many commercials, how many lotion commercials you see that are geared towards the African-American. We already wear it. So there's no point in losing money on marketing in that aspect.
Well, they better advertise to us as well. We need it.
No, what he needed to do was go back to class and have everyone pull up their pants leg. Listen.
No, and then get, no, and then start scratching, folks. This is what I do. Like, if you don't think you need lotion, you better pass this scratch test. You see that? I put on lotion today. You know how you can tell? You don't see white streaks going down here.
Well, but the point is that I'm going to tell you 99% of African Americans are already wearing some type of lotion. We go to the store, we're going to pick up some type of lotion.
But Cole, they still
got to
advertise to people that use the
do
product.
Do you want the Black History Month?
Listen, don't you people drink Coca-Cola? But I'm going to tell you right now, Coke still got commercials. Pepsi's still doing the halftime show. Well, not anymore. But people going to advertise you. Advertise to stay at the top of mind.
Everybody drinks Coke. Everybody drinks Pepsi. Do you really want the African-American lotion line at Bath & Body Works?
No, I'm
saying... Okay, well, then that's what you're asking for.
They don't have to use cultural appropriation.
Like that.
But they can still have a demographic that they market to as well.
I agree with you, but that's like... advertising heat in hell. Why?
It's like there's other
Why
ways
you advertise to us about lotion. It's like advertising heat in hell.
It's kind of like when Nancy Pelosi did the whole White House thing. It's like there's other ways that you can pay tribute or respect or something like that. You don't have to go overboard.
Right. And it should have been something where it wasn't going to be lucrative to your pockets. Mm. I mean, make it lucrative to someone who, you know, might have a meaning for Juneteenth. That's what gets me, you know.
And who was in the room that allowed this foolishness
in the room where it
to
happened
hit the production line?
That's
like
a good
how many
point.
People did it have to hit before someone said push the button and said let's spend millions of dollars on Juneteenth ice cream, and then they had to take it off the
you
shelves
know,
and throw it away?
That's a great point.
I wouldn't know who was in the room when they was arguing over lotion. That's what I wouldn't know. Who was in that
room? He's still stuck on.
Like, did the teacher walk in and be like, okay kids, raise your hand if you ask you. Like, what was the kids?
Some kids never even heard the word
ashy. Was this a Juneteenth debate? Like, this debate falls around Juneteenth. I got questions. Because here's another thing. Did people know that healthy skin just needs to be moisturized in general? Like, I'm doing the ash test, but that was just a physical test. But I hope people just know that lotion is actually supposed to moisturize and nourish. Right. So whether or not you can see that people need lotion, which is they were doing a physical debate. Lotion actually has uses that aren't just for to see if you ashy or not. Like that's, I'm just throwing that out there.
Cole
as well.
Brings up a great point because other brands have gotten in trouble with this. Dove actually has gotten in trouble a couple times for some, I can't remember exactly because it's been a few times, but who is in the room? You know, when all these, I always wonder that same exact thing because now, you know, I don't doubt that there are some people that come from minority backgrounds in those rooms, but then who is actually making the decisions, you know? Because are you really going to speak up to your boss?
Yeah. Are they allowed to talk?
They be lame. They don't know no better.
But listen, back in the day, this is the day when I was in school, maybe prior to you all, but I'm pretty sure at the beginning of your lives, it was Ponds. Everybody remember Ponds? Mm. Ponds
yes,
had
ma'am.
Advertisements. Yes. Did you ever see any of us doing any of the Ponds advertisements?
That. There was no need for it.
But
why?
That's what I'm saying. You know, that they're advertising
that.
To a certain demographic.
And
I'm
they're
just
advertising
saying,
the wrong way. I think.
I'm just saying they can do better.
What if I don't know what Ponds is?
You don't know what Ponds is?
No, man. I'm so sorry.
It's lotion. It was a lotion line.
It's
Ponds
a lotion
used to be
brand.
Like, it was like Jergens. Ponds and Jergens were about on the same level. Yeah. And Ponds was always the competitor for Jergens. And there, to be honest with you, there wasn't a lot. It was either cocoa butter, Ponds, Jergens. It wasn't a lot of, you know, different options as far as lotion. But again, even in those commercials, it's almost like they didn't actually put to our demographic because we were, it's like when they go out and do these questions on the street, they're like, okay, do you wear, yeah. Well, if 99% of the people you're interviewing or you're surveying say in their African-American or ethnicity other of brown, if they say they're already wearing lotion, when they go back to the boardrooms, they only advertise, they say, well, we found out that this part of the market is not buying lotion. That's the part we need to go to. So as far as this Juneteenth thing, and personally, I feel like it wasn't a malicious thing, but it's the same thing.
It was a stupid thing.
It was stupid, but they advertise because they sell everything on every holiday. I've even seen now there are religious holidays that they're catering to that just need to be left alone, like certain Jewish holidays. Certain, oh, they're messing stuff up in those particular aspects as well.
If you try to commercialize anything too much, it's going to feel like culture appropriation. Yes. Exactly. I think that's the point that we're trying to make. Every holiday is a celebration. Let's get it popping. But if you're going to lean in, that's what I think the companies are trying to do. They're trying to lean in and show that they support a certain culture or a certain community. And of course, Snook, you're right. They do want to make a little money along the way.
Ka-ching.
You have to figure out a way to collab. Like, that's why we say collab, collab, collab. Because
and listen.
And listen, Linda, because hypothetically, if Walmart made an announcement that we're partnering with every single HBCU, they're all going to get a portion. We're going to donate $2 million to every single HBCU. And the way we're going to do that is we got our ice cream coming out in Juneteenth, baby. I think that that would have been perceived completely different.
You're absolutely right.
They could have even taken it a step further and been like, you know what? To the sporting teams or to the this, it's the year of Title IX. So since it's the 50th anniversary of Title IX, we're donating to all the women's sports teams at HBCUs. And how we're going to do that? We got ice cream on Juneteenth. I think that matters. But because they had a room of people that I don't know who was in there, we don't know who was in the room where it happened, because we don't know what happened in there, it fell flat. Because
we know what happened.
Well, we know what happened. We're going to send this clip to the boardroom of Walmart and see what they say. Tell them that, you know, you needed to have been sitting there.
They got to go overboard with the aesthetics, too, because I think that's where it goes wrong in a lot of these lines, is the aesthetics of it. It just doesn't feel right when you look at it. It's like, you know, if we're here to celebrate history over here in this country, then why are we showing images of other continents? I'm not going to be specific, but
I know what you're talking about. And here's another idea, just throwing it out there. If you want to lean in, what if you got a black artist from one of those HBCUs to do the label, to do the artwork, to collab?
Target did it because Target had a line with Basquiat and a bunch of young artists in their line of kids clothing, adult clothing, and baby clothing. And literally, I've bought Vance numerous shirts that were from this line. And it specifically says on the line that it's a African American or whatever, however it is. They tell you specifically on that tag and label that this is a collaboration with so-and-so from, and it gives you the rundown of it. And yes, it makes me want to buy the product more. This stuff is cute.
It's not overly done.
Because the artist actually is, you know, appreciative of having it. And they're also respectful of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So they don't make it look clownish either. So it's really, really nice. So that would have been what they could have done. And they could have done a Juneteenth type
collab
thing.
Collab. When you collab with the culture, it comes across better.
I would have went right in Walmart and bought me a t-shirt.
Exactly. If they would have collabed, I would have had the ice cream in the fridge right now.
Well, listen, it's kind of an oxymoron if you think about it. If the marketing company is doing their research, as Nikki's talking about, and we see that they are using other races to advertise for their lotion, it would usually mean to me, I always thought, well, if it's good for them, it's probably not going to work for me.
Well,
it's kind of backwards marketing, because they're using it. Right. Is it going to be any good for us, you know?
And you know what? You bring up a good point, Snook, because it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's about other races, but even Beyonce has gotten in trouble because it's not even about another race. It's about other cultures. You know, everybody could be one race, but there's a lot of different cultures within one race. You know, like every black person doesn't come from the same culture. Every Hispanic person doesn't come from the same culture. So we can't use things that are African print if we're talking about, you know, American black people. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
No, you're absolutely right.
Are we back to that again?
Oh yeah, that's what the lines look like. That the Bath and Body Works line, they look like that, like those kind of like African prints and things like that.
You know who could help the hood? Like you were talking about Walmart, and they could have did the Juneteenth better. If these people jump on Juneteenth, it'll shut the world down and everything. These folks ain't never had a commercial, radio drop, or nothing. Ramen noodles. If they decide to help the hood, they could clean the streets up. Because everybody
they don't need no advertising.
I ain't seen a commercial. I seen a Raymond Noodle t-shirt.
Have they ever advertised anything? They like, I'm going no matter if I see them on TV or not. We got ramen noodles right there in the cabinet right now.
I asked my granddaughter just the day before yesterday, what did you have? She said, I had some ramen noodles. I said, oh, come on now, Greasy.
They ain't got a cartoon. They ain't got a logo. They ain't got no mascot.
They don't have nothing.
They,
you're right. I've never seen.
That's what we need to comment.
I'm going to tell you what. If Ramen Noodles ever wanted to pop out and finally advertise, Juju is on to something. If they hit up Juneteenth, I don't care what they did. If they did Juneteenth, we going to get them Juneteenth Ramen Noodles. Oh, yeah.
Because so many cultures use them different ways. Like, you know, I was with someone, they were making yak. You know about that yak, right?
What you know about that yak?
No. There is a breakfast.
That's what I thought she was talking
about.
There's
a breakfast that they do with ramen noodles, and they call it yak. And yak.
Wait a minute! I thought you were talking about
yakisoba. Yes, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. So yes.
Mm. No, wait a minute. We was talking about the hood.
I thought we was talking about yak.
Those are my powers.
Okay. Anyways, long story short, ramen noodles. Y'all get a pass. Everybody else, think about it. Stop. Think about it. Collaborate to make it great. All right. Happy Juneteenth and happy Father's Day to all the lit papas out there. Up, we have Shantae Wayans of the Hilarious Wayans family. She's featured in Marlon Wayans Presents The Headliners. It's on HBO Max. She's about to be in the A soon. Check her out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We got a legend in the building, okay? Like, I checked out your social media. I've been looking at your stuff. You're funny, okay? There's a lot of people that think they're funny. You're funny, but how could you not be funny coming from the family that you come from? So, first of all, welcome, Shantae Wayans.
Hey.
You guys know the family name. Welcome to Montgomery & Company. This is my wife, Serena, my sister, Cole, and my Snooker Booker, which is my mom.
Hey, Snooker Booker.
Hey, how you doing, child? How you doing?
I miss Montgomery. I'm sorry. I normally don't start off with the nickname, but how you doing?
But that's just quite all right.
We love it. So I'm sure everyone growing up thought their family was fun, but y'all's family was hilarious. So what is it like? Is it really funny all the time? Or is it just like, nah, we turn our funny on when we got to? Like, what is it like?
No, you know, it's crazy. Even our seriousness, there's jokes. Damon has a story where he used to not spank his kids if they made him laugh. You know what I mean? And stuff like that. So we have...
What?
We have a lot of, like, we could get away with some stuff if we could make you laugh.
I love that. So you talked about his kids. Do y'all ever have, like, the OGs versus new school? Like, oh, y'all ain't even funny. This ain't even funny. No, like, is there any of that type of rivalry?
No, because for some reason, like, Kenan and everybody, they still there. You know what I mean? They there and censored to the public, but... In clothes, you know, you still got in living color. We just can't put that out there.
I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm
right.
Just saying. So, no, I love that. So you guys tour together. You have the HBO Max comedy special. Marlon Wayans Presents The Headliners. It's streaming now, everyone, just so check it out. But tell me about that, how that became about. Talk about it.
You know, it's crazy. Pretty much all of us have opened for Marlon. Maybe not so much Tony Baker, but a lot of us have been on the road or worked with him in some type of shape or form. You know, he's done a few specials and he's doing more stuff, and he wanted to kind of give back to the people that he's done it for, you know, or done it with. So that's how that came about. He wanted to get his team together and show that we shouldn't necessarily just be opening anymore.
Mm. I like that.
Listen, y'all are the type of funny that is belly laugh funny. Like,
yes,
it is. It like you think it's okay. It's that's the climax of funny, and then someone says something else, and then you keep laughing and laughing and laughing. And that's the part. It's not like, you know, some people can just tell a joke, and then you're like, ha, oh, that was funny.
You might chuckle.
Yeah, you're like, ha ha ha.
They don't have to even say anything most of the time. It's just in the facial expressions and the body movements that you don't even have to say anything for it to be funny.
Yes, and that's the type of energy I love going to comedy shows, and where it's where you literally the whole time you leave the next day, you got pains in your side from laughing because you didn't worked out muscles and you ain't even know you had. That's the type of belly laughs that I know you and your family are about. So I love stuff like that. Yes. That's the good stuff.
And I wonder if did your mom and dad ever have to calm y'all down from your comedy antics?
Man, you know, my mother has it too. She could be a little bit more firm, but you know, my mother was young. My mom was young when she had us, so she was a kid too, raising us. Like, we used to get, I think I got maybe 3 spankings in my life, and she would cry with me when she spanked me. So my mom, my dad wasn't there, but you know, we had, it was like that type of thing. And it's funny because one, to touch on Cole, you said, it just keeps like, that's what I was trying to say with the last question, that it's like an alley-oop, you know, somebody gets the ball, it heightens the joke, and then it just goes. And then you got the act outs, like Sean, oh my God, like impersonation. So sometimes, especially with my career and learning from them, I would call them, and if you say anything around them, they automatically go to that's funny. You'd be like, I just told you such and such passed away. They'd be like, yeah, that's not the funny part. The funny part is, you know, and they'll come up with it. But we've laughed at funerals and all types of stuff.
No, that's lit, because they say comedians use life as humor is what they say comedians use. So I could see that. A lot of people might be like, well, what's funny in that?
Yeah, and I like that sports reference you threw in there too, because I mean, I can just imagine. We're a sports family and we're competitive. We talked about it in the last episode. I can just imagine y'all growing up with these jokes and roasting each other. I bet the roast, Lord, y'all got the best roast. And was it competitive growing up?
The crazy thing is, I was so, like, you know, I want to say introvert in a way, you know, around a certain people, but you never wanted to, it's the bombing factor, right? So everybody has these jokes, it's funny, 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 and then there's that one Wayans that might have just not needed to jump into the conversation, and then our laughter is so huge, you can hear it in the next city. So you have 20 Wayanses with different optics just screaming of laughter. It's just, one of my favorite stories to tell is, this is when I realized I think you can make anything funny if you wanted to. And I remember graduating from high school, and I graduated from a place where I didn't grow up in. You know, I moved out there 2 years, didn't really have friends. But I graduated, my uncles and my aunt came to my graduation, and they came to my crib. The house wasn't that big, right? It couldn't fit that many people. So I told one of my friends, you can come, but you can't bring a plus one or plus 20. about 15 minutes later, he rolls around the corner with his mom in a wheelchair and his entourage of about 10 other family members.
I know you.
So I'm livid, right? It's my graduation day. I'm happy, but I am mad. Get in the house, one of my relatives go, don't worry about it. Because now they want to take pictures and stuff, right? They go, don't worry about it. This one, we was doing the Polaroids, right? So you know the ones where you got to go get the film.
Box camera.
Yes.
So my relative go, don't worry about it. And they set everybody up, and then they stood behind them. And so basically the picture that was taken that they developed later only had their waist.
You know,
face down. So you just saw pictures of them like,
you know what?
Like, you have to laugh. You can't not laugh.
You can't do nothing else but laugh. You started calling.
Well, that's what I had on, so I know that's me.
Basically. Facts. And speaking of that, so that's interesting because you know, like how you said you can make anything funny. Yeah. So with comedians, I know people probably think y'all just get up there, boom, I'm gonna just tell some jokes. But anybody who knows there's a process. You gotta write, you gotta rehearse, you gotta test it on a group. So can you just talk about what is your process before you go do a stand up, like, and especially starting a new one? Do you always just go to my old faithful if it's a big gig, or do you try to, you know, bring new material out?
So it depends. You know, holding an audience for 45 minutes to an hour could be way harder than 15, 20 minutes. All day, 15, 20 minutes, I'm like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But when you're trying to tell a story, also, you know, I talk about my lifestyle, which I hate to really say that because if I was straight, then everything I'm talking about wouldn't be an issue, right? But I'm in these crowds and, you know, you got some dudes up in there. You got some older people that go to church and they'll hear it for about 5 minutes and be like, all right. But I'm like, I'm talking about marriage and I'm talking about trying to have kids and what that life looks like, yeah, you know, yeah, for me. So, but my process is that I like to stay true to myself. It is showing stuff that I go through and then also trying to make it relatable to everybody. But the darkest thing, so like right now, I'll say one of my premises, which is a lot of stuff has been crazy, right? Feels very end of the world-ish. And as a lesbian, it's scary, you know, and it got me looking like, I don't know if I want to be gay right now, just in case this is the time for Jesus.
Goodbye. Get off of here.
And she's like, so seriously. She's so serious.
I was like, yeah, it's crazy out here right now.
But this is the workout.
No, but for real, though,
right?
There are some crazy laws right now.
But for real, but the workout is, I'm not going to be gay. But at the same time, I did grow up a Jehovah's Witness, and it does sit in the back of my head. This joke is to try to pull in the church people who are like, oh, okay, so she get that God don't like this. And then to pull the gay people like, you know, hey, man, I feel you, but don't give up.
She's trying to appeal to both sides.
I like that, though. So that's what they say. Every real comedian takes inspiration from their real life. And that, so that's dope because you took, like, you being a Jehovah's Witness, I can't, like, what was, like, what?
Man, let's just say, like, it's, you know, the scariest thing, like, my grandfather thought everybody was gay back in the day that wasn't Jehovah's Witness. So, you know, I was fortunate to be in a generation of, like, the Queen Latifahs and MC Lights because they wore baggy clothes. So you couldn't really, right, you know what I mean? I was fitting
right,
in with the...
Right. You couldn't really say it. Like, okay. You don't know. We don't know. Yeah.
Dang, that's crazy.
But
though,
my family did know. It's just, I think when it came to religion, I searched for a lot of different avenues. And I think this speaks a lot about most of the LGBT people. We usually always try it before we really make the decision. I've been baptized. I try to learn Islam. I sat in front of the Israelites when they was just like, homo.
Wow.
But I did, you know.
Put the time in.
What I'm saying is, I'm tried, so that's the crazy.
No, so when they go to your show, because you actually are going to have a tour, you tour a lot, which is amazing. So during the pandemic, I'm glad to see that people are getting back out and touring. What should people take away when they leave your show? Like, how do you want them to feel? Like, what do you want the vibes to be when people leave a show that's yours?
Oh, man. The first thing I want you to feel is that it was just a really hilarious show. I want people to be able to dig into my world and see how we have a lot of similarities. You know, there's a lot of struggles and stuff like that, and how you can turn a lot of those traumas and so forth and so on into good. But a lot of things have came into my life because I've made certain adjustments, and that's kind of where my whole hour is going right now. Realizing,
love it,
and understand, yeah.
Absolutely.
Love it. And so I'm curious about this because you're a comedian, so I want to ask you all these type of questions. And the Speaking Comedy Tour dates in Atlanta are June 25th, and in Houston, there's some other dates.
June 26th,
okay? Drop some nuggets in there. But I'm always curious, I got to ask a comedian, is it a compliment or an insult when somebody is getting, like, roasted in a set? Like, if you're roasting somebody on your set, is that a compliment or is that an insult?
Well, I think comedians, like, for me, I like to have fun. And if you're fun, it's going to help the show, right? I've learned audience members a lot of times like to participate. They like to feel a part of the show. If you're not annoying or overly drunk because you don't know how to stop, it actually helps with certain jokes. Like, I might say something, and then the audience member might say something. I go, that is what I'm talking about. And then it changes, you know what I mean, the whole thing. So got it's not you. An insult. Yep. Only if you're not being annoying. Once you're being annoying and then people just keep ragging on you and start to tell you to shut
finish
up.
Finish him.
Yeah, that's when it's like, you know, which the club should ask them to leave or be quiet anyway, but that's the only when it's not a compliment.
No, I love that. I love that. So, like we said, you're touring. You can check out the headline. Marlon Wayans presents The Headliners. It's on HBO Max. You're touring. You're doing so many different things. You've already had your own big show. So is there anything that you really want to accomplish? Like, is there something that, like, you're like, yeah, this is on my to-do list as far as, like, performance?
I think the biggest thing is creating a show around, you know, my whole life. You know what I mean? That's like my number one goal. And also, you know, I'm into this metaverse coming. You know, I'm trying to build.
Oh boy. Yes.
Oh boy.
Now you talking my language. Oh, now you talking goodness. My language.
Listen, regardless of what y'all say, it's coming and it's actually already here. It's and it's been over. Here for a minute. Mm-hmm. So y'all better get some real estate.
I'm going to be in the metaverse tomorrow. That's what I'm trying to tell y'all. I got a gig tomorrow in the metaverse. I don't know what people think. I know y'all think that this is a fake world that we're talking about. There is money in that world. There is people buying land, people that you know that are famous, and that doesn't matter. But I'm just saying, people that have a lot of resources behind to look up, research, and figure out if this is a good investment, and they're investing. So I'm not saying everybody should invest, but I'm saying that people should warm up Snookabooka to the idea of a metaverse.
Well, you know, I keep telling you that I've seen you out there. I see the metaverse almost every day.
Yeah.
No. See, you're trying to say the fake stuff in the world is the metaverse. No, there is a metaverse.
See, you talking about metaverse 1.0. We talking about metaverse 2.0. You know, we just, you know, it's you and the iPhone 1 reality right now.
She said you're the iPhone 1.
Yeah, you're the iPhone.
Oh my gosh.
That's the problem.
Well, let me ask you, are you coming to Maryland? I need to check it out, but are you gonna be coming to Maryland? Like, everybody wants to bypass Maryland.
So look, the tour has just started. We're racking up dates right now.
Okay.
Maryland is on the list, as well as DC and Orlando. So these are the things I'm gotcha. Pulling in. I'll make sure I find you.
Well, maybe that's where I can catch her at. We'll come up, okay. Nikki. We'll come up and go to a show.
Yes.
Oh, I'm coming.
I'm in Maryland, so yes.
I'll be there.
Yep.
Don't sit in the front, Miss Montgomery, though. Please don't sit in the front.
Because those are the ones that y'all pick on.
I won't be bothered. You can pick me out. I'm good hearted. I'll
she gonna be a, she gonna be a good sport. She's gonna play along.
No, y'all gonna come and it's gonna turn into a whole tournament. Y'all gonna come and I'm gonna be like, in parentheses it says,
okay.
I don't know how to curse. Like, it's a respect thing. I'm not really trying to dish you, but
don't sit in the front. You got best press show. You
know, don't change anything because of me. But before we leave, one quick thing too, I just want to say that I know you come from a comedic family, and I was just so overjoyed to see Wayne in Bel Air. I thought that was you.
Yeah. Oh, Marlon in Bel Air.
That was, he did phenomenal. And I know that all of you comedians in that family, you'll probably be moving over to the big screen as well. You
drama.
Know,
yeah. Comedians can do drama too, is what Snook was barking.
Yes.
It don't mean you can only do comedy. And Marlon came through with the serious role. I don't even know if I like Marlon, and that's good for him.
Listen,
because he
that
made
means
me
he's
mad.
Believable.
Yes. Have you seen Record Room for a Dream?
Okay, so my husband was talking about that movie. I haven't seen it. He's seen it. And he was like, it was really good, so I got to watch that. So
definitely.
Let me just back up here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you come to Maryland, we won't sit in the front. I would say you might want to have your car on deck, because I don't know. Sometimes, you know, Maryland, we kind of act up sometimes. I just don't know.
You know what?
I don't want you to invite you here and not tell you. Just you might have to be
she
on point.
She apologizing for the city already.
I'm apologizing. If something gets out of hand, you know how we do.
Man.
But just saying, come through. We would love for you to come through.
I'm coming. Yeah, it ain't gonna stop me. I know how to escape.
All right, Shantae, I appreciate you hopping on here with us at Montgomery & Company. We gonna be at the show.
Yes.
Y'all check out Marlon Wayans Presents The Headliners on HBO Max. And catch her out. She coming to a city near you. Let's go.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we have the co-founders of Songglorious, which is an application that you can make customized songs. Father's Day's coming up, y'all. You can make customized songs. We have Omeya Tao and Ellen Hodges.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're the founders of Songglorious, which is a company that basically lets you customize songs to your liking. It could be a birthday song, Valentine's Day song, it doesn't matter. You wanted people to be able to customize music. So can you just tell me the origin story of how Songglorious and how this all began? Because we like to talk a lot of business and founders and—
And family.
And family. So you're like all of everything all in one with us.
Yeah, so Omeya and I were living in New York during the pandemic. And we had been doing music together a lot and just, you know, mostly for fun. And we made a song for a friend's wedding, one of my friend's wedding, for, you know, about their love story. And the reaction was just, you know, amazing. So during the pandemic, when everybody's lives were kind of in turmoil, we're like, you know, just thinking about things we could do, side hustles we could start. And so we, you know, launched a website doing personalized songs. And the plan was for us to, you know, just make them all and, you know, make maybe two or three a week, and that would be fun. But, you know, we put some advertising money into it, and it really blew up bigger than we expected, and artists started reaching out to us, and it just grew from there.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful idea, though.
It is.
It's so amazing.
Because we know there's personalized cars, there's personalized everything, basically, and I'm like, I love personalizing things. You put money behind it, the business started to grow. Now you're applying to Shark Tank, or how does that work? How did that work?
Yeah, so just one thing is, when we decided to do this, we launched the website literally within like 4 hours of like deciding we're gonna do it on our couch.
That's
in Brooklyn.
Crazy.
When we were living with like three other people, you know, our roommates, and yeah, we just decided on the spot, like, let's do it. Let's
well,
just try
test it.
It.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wait, well, before we even get to Shark Tank, how did you come up with the name? Like, Songglorious, I love it. It makes a lot of sense. So who came up with it? How did that happen?
Thank you. I'd like to take credit. I'll make sure that I take the credit. But honestly, it just came. We were just sitting on the couch, and I was coming up with names.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ellen was, you know, she was like judging the names I was giving.
It's like, that sucks.
And I usually come up with like horrible stuff. Most of the time it's like horrible stuff I'm coming up with. So I have Ellen to be the judge of what I'm saying. And then I said Songglorious, and she like perked up. She's like, oh, I like that. Let's do it right now.
I love that.
And it represents what we do. I mean, it's songs, and we feel like it's glorious. So.
Yeah,
I love that. And you said within
it.
4 hours you had a website. So within 4 hours of the name, you guys went about getting a website. Did you start an LLC? Like, what all did you do within that 4 hours or that one day?
In the beginning, literally all we did was we just launched a Shopify store with some, you know, custom options built in, and just kind of did some basic design.
Yeah, very, very,
very
minimal.
Basic. To just, you know, see if the idea was even viable, if people would buy it.
I love
that. And they did. So then we started doing, you know, first like an LTD and then like later an LLC. And we got all those, you know, that into line a little later.
No, because we like to talk about the business aspect of it, because sometimes people think to start a company, they think, oh my gosh, there's so much we have to do to start an idea. But you guys got the idea on your couch. You came up with the name. And then 4 hours later, you started making a website. How much money did you even need to just start to get the idea off the ground?
Yeah, it's probably like just because of, you know, setting up the website. We did it as cheaply as possible because, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like we had a lot of money. We were trying to...
And we had no idea if the idea was going to work. We didn't want to invest a lot.
Yeah, you don't want to... Exactly. So we probably, like, in the first week, maybe $10,000 overall. And that's with... and that was all, like, credit card, like, debt that I took on and, and saved up money from, you know, I was working on the railroad in New York at Amtrak.
And that was all in, like, just basically social media advertising. That was the only thing we really spent money on at all.
Opening the store, and I always tell people, like, I'm not one to give advice. I always take it with a grain of salt. But, like, if you have an idea that you think is good, you just start it as cheaply as possible and see if it's working, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you can start to expand and whatever.
Hey, that's some good advice.
Oh, that's great advice. So what made you guys go all in?
The money. That was good.
That's all you needed.
Yeah, it's the revenue started coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have crazy profit margins because you know we pay the artists. We have to heavily put a lot of money into marketing. Mm-hmm. So we worked jobs. I had like a career in the railroad. I had worked railroad for like 10 years, and you know I was managing a project in Penn Station, New York. So. Once we started seeing like we got enough revenue to start living, you know, it's time we start doing something we really like doing.
Yeah.
You know, I like the railroad. I enjoyed it. They did a lot for me. I appreciate everything. But I love music and doing this and being our own bosses. So
yeah, yes. And I was just working as a barista in Manhattan, and so it was an easy quit for me, an easy transition. Not that I didn't, I loved my job there as well, but it was never a career. So it wasn't like I was leaving a whole lot behind.
Yeah, and I think we quit a little too early.
We
honestly
definitely quit too early.
Because we didn't know what we were doing, and we got lucky because it could have easily went south. It was risky when we quit.
And but you took a risk. So. That's what it's about. You got to you gotta take that leap of faith. You guys took a leap of faith, and look what came out of it.
That's true, yeah. That's true. It's hard to take that risk. It's really hard, especially once you get settled in a good job. Mm-hmm. You got a decent career, and it's like... It's hard to leave that. It's hard
to leave stability and that security and that stability. But you guys did it. You took the leap of faith. You had some income coming in. You had enough that you could see, you had the vision to see where this could go, and you wanted to go all in on it. Now you apply, you get to Shark Tank. What is that like? What are your thoughts? Are you terrified? Are you scared? I know you guys had a great creative pitch.
Gosh.
Tell us about your pitch, how you did it.
Yeah, so I mean, it was pretty terrifying. That's a good way of putting it. You know, you're sitting, you're walking into the tank, for the first time, and you really are meeting the investors for the first time, and they've done this 1,000 times, so it's like it's routine to them, and so they're not intimidated whatsoever. But for us, we had done local TV stuff, but nothing, in person, nothing live, like, recording like that. And so we were pretty nervous, but, honestly, the pitch part itself, where you come out and you're like, hey, Sharks, you need to do 1 minute, spiel. We were less nervous for that because we had rehearsed it like 1,000 times so we could do it in our sleep. And that was like almost like just a performance. Like,
yeah.
And being musicians, we're kind of used to, that aspect of being on stage. But the Q&A, we were really, concerned of how that was going to go afterwards.
Yeah, because you're always worried you're going to say something stupid, especially on TV. And like, oh, everybody's going to hear how dumb I am,
I can understand that. We've seen other people who have a great idea and they say one bad thing and you're like, oh man, you messed it all up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we're used to watching. Like, every episode's like someone getting destroyed and you're, and everybody's kind of watching like, yeah, destroy them.
It's entertaining.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the things, on special occasions, like I have someone who always calls and sings happy birthday. And I love that they have that thought for me and everything. It's a little bit to go through to, for them to sing it to me. And you smile and say thank you and all of that.
What
kind of songs, and tell us a little bit about the songs and things that you do for special occasions.
Yeah,
that's a good question. We do all kinds of occasions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the customer orders whatever they want, so they put in the details. So we've got all kinds of stuff, like, you know, they're getting married, or it's a birthday, or it's an anniversary, and sometimes like, oh, it's a breakup song, like they want to break up with their girlfriend, they buy her a song, and like, we've seen some breakups, we've seen some like. You know, the guy's married and he'll buy a song for his girlfriend on the side.
Oh, that's interesting.
What?
What kind of a reveal do you have on that?
I would love a video of that.
Oh, no. I know, right? Really? Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, because my mind didn't even go to that place. I'm just thinking about all, but yeah, I guess that's also all a very big stuff. Market as well. Yeah.
Love comes in all shapes all and sizes,
there
I guess.
There you go.
And speaking of that, you guys are both artists. And so do you still perform? Do you still do music? Or now you're business owners and that's your main focus?
It's definitely, our main focus has definitely shifted into the business rather than, you know, the producing side of it. But, you know, we still record for ourselves sometimes, you know, if he has an idea, nothing serious, just for fun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just for fun in the studio, like in our home studio. It's nothing crazy.
Yeah, right. Y'all coming up with hits in there.
That's right.
Our next interview, they'll have like five cooking. New hits for all these artists. And yeah, that's going to be the next thing.
I wish. It's tough because, like, you know, you're working on the business so much. You guys know how it is. Like, we put so much time into this. Every extra minute we have. So I'd love to play, like, gigs again, you know?
Yeah.
Once the time opens up.
We keep saying, we're like, oh, you know, we'll
let's do a set here.
Yeah, somewhere.
Let's do a set,
yeah.
When you start to become your own boss, this happens a lot. You know, when you build your own company, it's like the creative aspect of you is not gone, but you have to deal so much with the functionality of the business and everything going on that the creative side might be the side that doesn't get as much love. Even with us, you know, as one of my favorite things to do is create, whether it's content, ideas. But sometimes it's like a whole week could pass and I was just doing the things that I got to get done first and that stuff falls to the side. But you guys are expecting, Ellen, you are pregnant.
What?
You guys are expecting.
Congrats.
What are you naming your baby? I want the whole world to know this.
We're going to do a reveal here right now.
Yeah. What are you going to name your baby? I'm excited for people to know this. And Snook and Cole are all going to hear this live right now. Don't forget to tell them why, okay?
Okay. So her first name is Layla, but her middle name is Renee.
Yes! Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Renee wants to think that she has something to do with that.
Right, of course.
And we're going to change our last names to Montgomery as well.
We're joining the family, you guys.
Hey,
part of the fam now.
Yes.
Well, listen, we wish you guys nothing but the best, Song Glorious. The reason that I came across of Song Glorious is because, first of all, I saw it on Shark Tank, but then I remembered that we needed it. I remembered that they license music. So you can get music made, and then you can get it made for commercial use. So I thought, we have a whole family vlog coming out about all of our adventures. We need music. So I went on Song Glorious, and I started clicking around, and y'all stop me if I'm lying, because I made one song, and then I was like, this is dope. I got another idea.
Yeah.
I made another.
Oh, yeah.
There hasn't been a bad one yet.
That's
it
awesome.
Got to like 9 songs, I think, and I was like, all right, I think I'm in a good place now of how much music we needed. But now those songs, Cole and them, they've heard the songs, they love them.
You know it's good when people are just like singing it randomly around the house, like my sister Kim is just randomly singing the song.
Yeah, so the reason that we came to Song Glorious is because I was actually a user that loved it, and it had a need, it filled an actual need. And then with us being artists in the family, I love the concept that the artists are making the money, the artists are empowered, the artists, you know, can control their own destiny in a pandemic.
The artists keep their rights.
Kept their rights. So there's a lot of things that we love, that's how they got here, is because we used the platform and we loved it. So
congrats to you guys on the functionality of it. Sometimes those things don't get talked about enough, but it is so easy to create your own song on there. I made probably about 11, 12 at this point.
Which is why we had to have you guys on here, because you guys have created something really amazing and it's really unique. Like, you know, like Renee said, there was a hole to fill there. There was a space to fill there for sure.
We got
to
ask you one question, because you have a new, you're building, your family's growing, and we talk about the money that you create for your family. What does generational wealth mean to you all now that you got your own company and you have a little nugget on the way?
That's a really good question. You know, I grew up in the Middle East, right? And my dad's Palestinian. So my grandfather was an orphan in Palestine, like a long time ago. And just thinking about what they did to help me get to where I am now, you know, I'd be nowhere without them. And the hard work that they put in and the struggle that they had to get me to have my, I have a easy life. You know, it's, you know, even before the company, it's pretty easy, you know? And I think just creating that generational wealth to pass on to the next generation is so important.
So that, you know, they can be empowered to do whatever.
To do what they want to do.
Yeah. Exactly.
And what they love.
Love that.
I agree.
Love that. We firmly believe in that. We always say it's a generational thing with Montgomery & Company. And we thank you, Ellen and Omea Montgomery, for joining the family. Company. Let's go.
Thank you guys so much for having us. And just so you know, the reason we like, you know, we work with you guys is because of how amazing you guys are, and it's like, look at this family, beautiful family.
Thank you.
You guys are so nice, and we love you guys. You're so wholesome, and you understand Song Glorious. So
Yes, thank you. It's all family now. It's all part of the family, and we miss you. Blessings on your little nugget coming. Let us know when she gets here. But you guys, thank you for joining us on Montgomery & Company.
Thank you so much.
Make it make sense. So Cole is going to explain dads at the door, but what we have to make sense is the fact that we need dads at the door to protect our kids at school. Cole?
Remember Dads and Donuts? It was a concept started by the school system to bring dads into the school system, be more active, take a more active role. It was a part of more so the PTA Association, and it was more initiatives that they would put out. They had, you know, a number of events that they would throw. This was one of them. Basically, it was for dads to come in the morning, have donuts, sit and eat with your kids, meet the administrators and the faculty of the school, you know, basically socialize with other dads. It was a great event just because a lot of dads, and I know when I was younger, a lot of dads worked. And so they didn't get to participate in as many activities as a lot of the moms. With that being said, Dads and Donuts was born. It was a success as far as I know. And some school systems may continue that till this day. But now there's a new concept out there. And I need for this entire country, mostly our governmental administration, to make it make sense as to why now we have Dads and Donuts and now have Dads and Doors. Dads and Doors is something that's fairly more recent, has been happening around the country with all of the school shootings. The fear that most parents feel dropping their kids off of school every day, there are a number of dads who are not going to accept it and feel like if they have to go to school and stay in the door for their kid to feel safe, to learn, for their family to feel like they're safe, that's what they're doing. Snook sent us an article of a dad standing at a door. I saw numerous videos of dads now standing at doors. And so more recently, I went to an event at my son's school. My son goes to a wonderful school. The community is very active in the school. There's a lot of programs that they actually throw. We had, shortly after the Uvalde school shooting, there was an event we had. It's basically a spring event, end of the year celebration. The school basically just saying, hey, we used to have these events all the time, but since COVID, this is the first year we can have it since we've been back. And it was absolutely wonderful. But one thing I did notice is that there were a record number of dads and dads at the doors. And so I want to say this. I want to give all the dads credit where credit is due. There are some dads that are very active in the schools all year round. This is nothing new to them. And I commend them. I think it's wonderful. But I do see a lot more dads at the doors. And I saw more dads at the event, period. And I saw a lot more moms at the events. So, you know, I think that the entire country is in a state of fear, a state of shock, and a state of grieving. And we're grieving that we no longer feel like our schools are safe. And so Dads at the Doors is born. I need for the government to make this make sense, because I remember in school learning and everyone being proud that no one was going to come into this country or try to challenge this country in a war or attack us from the outside, because we were the strongest country in the world, and that no military, no army, no navy, no air force could touch us. I need the government. I need someone to make it make sense. I'm in the strongest country in the world, how we believe that these fathers, which it's great that the fathers are at the school, but feel like that their children can't be safe at the school. And we think that that's okay. We don't think that any of our policies and procedures that are put in place for guns and safety of our kids in schools needs to be refocused. We just want to let it go at what we're doing right now. And we think this is okay. We really think this is an alternative that all schools should be looking at, because if you do nothing and say nothing, you think there's no problem. So make it make sense. Please.
You know, I'm feeling real presidential this month, and it's not just because I met our forever first lady. I feel like there's a lot of intersectionality that's connecting, where people are making all of our problems all of our problems. You know, it's Pride Month, there's Juneteenth, there's a lot of intersectionality, and I love that it's connecting. Even this shirt right here that I'm wearing is connecting the intersectionality. It's a rainbow fist, just in case you aren't seeing it. But also, shouts to Sha'Carri Richardson. Came back, won the 200, back like she never left. What Drake say? I'm Sha'Carri, smoking on and off the track, baby. You know what? I am feeling presidential. I ran into Senator Warnock at the airport. There's just a lot of vibes going on. ATL, stand up. Y'all know what to do. It's election time. I don't have to say it. At MoCo, it's a generational thing. We'll see y'all next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.